Position number 12385, reel 15.
Williamson, reel 15. Bill Williamson, can you... you were describing at the end of reel 14 about the Washington Battalion, what you thought of them at this stage. Could you continue with that?
Yes. Well, the Washington was formed of, for the most part, of Americans and Canadians, and with a few other people that had lived for a short while in the United States or Canada from Eastern Europe and so on. But for the most part, they were American and Canadian troops. Of the American troops, generally they were a bit younger than the rest of us in the rest of the battalion, chiefly because most of the Canadians and the comrades from Eastern Europe and those from France had spent a long time in the labor movements, whereas a great many of the young Americans that came over were products of, especially those from New York, of course, products of the City College of New York, which was, they said, was a breeding ground for communism at that time, that many of the professors and a great number of the students were communists. And before I had been to Spain on one or two of my visits to New York, I had met some of them when they were actually at college, and then they turned up later in Spain. On the same question of that, can you no, when I go like that, we'll go. Yes. And where were we now? We're at...
You were describing the people from the college in New
York. Oh, yes, in City College in New York. And as such, they were either not quite finishing their graduation or only just finished it, so that put them in their 20s or early... puts them in their early 20s. And most of my friends, they just happened to have been, not because you sought them out specially or anything, but they just happened to be Jewish. Many of them they became quite well known later on.
Do you remember any names?
But... the ones that I'm trying to recollect, I just can't recall. But that was the one thing that I do remember. They were about 5-6 years an average younger than the rest of us. And then that was, I don't know whether I mentioned before, the attack on Brunetti, that we had... that very, very heavy losses in which Oliver Law, the first black, at that time we didn't call them black, we called them Negro commanders of the Washington Battalion, was killed. And he was either killed there or in the subsequent battles at... in Quinto and Belchite. But anyway, as a result of the, I think it must have been at Brunetti he was killed, because after Brunetti, the Lincolns and the Washington battalions merged and became the Washington Lincoln Battalion, of which I was a member. We then went... the attack about the end of August, about August 23rd, I think, was the attack on Kinto and Belchite, two villages or small towns in Aragon there, that and we had very, very bitter fighting there, street fighting, that I remember we had tremendous losses on our attack on the church, because they'd made that a fortified redoubt, the fascists. But eventually we managed to conquer it, but at a great loss to ourselves. And of course, a greater loss to the fascists, which they were able to replenish easier than we were. That the fighting over all these towns and cities, the Air Force distinguished itself very, very well. Could you? Yes,
the merge of the two.
Yes. The we had, yes, the attack on Kinto by the Lincolns. Are you recording now?
Yes, I am. Yes.
I think I made a mistake a little bit earlier. When they merged the Lincolns and the Washington, it became the Lincoln-Washington Battalion. And as such, we took place in very, very heavy street fighting in Kinto and Belchite. I think we were fighting for about a week there, we were put into reserve there. We made a night march of 12 miles to a place called Kinto, from Kinto to Kodo.
How do you spell that?
And yes, Kinto is a small town, Quinto, and then we marched to Kodo for the attack on Belchite. Codo is Kodo. In which we had terrific losses. We were fighting hand to hand, from house to house. Often there would be fascists in a two-story house. They'd retreat to the upper stories and then lob hand grenades down into the fireplace down below, and also a lot of street fighting, in which it was very difficult to use our machine guns very effectively in the house-to-house fighting. Each house had to be taken separately. And
what were you doing then yourself? Well, is this in Kinto or Kodo?
Oh, yes. Well, I was still on the machine gun, but I also had a rifle as well when that couldn't be used. I had no sidearms in the International Brigade, unlike before. And it would be mostly, but with hand grenades, that was what we were fighting with chiefly.
This is in Kinto or in Kodo? You're describing the fighting.
This was on Belchite.
Yeah.
We marched from Kinto to Kodo, which was just behind Belchite. And from there we attacked Belchite itself. And Belchite is on a small hill. And the, crowning the hill was this massive church with a massive stone tower, which the fascists had fortified. And that took a long time to to conquer. But
how did you dislodge them in the end?
Pardon?
How did you dislodge them in the end?
Well, it was just a question of hand-to-hand fighting, bayonet fighting with hand grenades and so on. I must confess, I've never used the bayonet myself. I don't know. I always prefer to be at some slight distance with hand grenades or such things, rifles. As I said, it was the Lincoln and the Dimitrov battalion, which was composed of Bulgarians named in honor of George Dimitrov, who defied Hitler at the Reichstag fire trial, and such was his effectiveness in defending himself that they had to turn him loose, and the Bulgarians named their chief battalion the Dimitrov battalion, and we were side with them in very, very heavy fighting. Also, the British were also taking part in this, but a little bit separate on one of our flanks.
Can I talk a bit about this attack on Belchite there?
Yes.
I'd like to ask you, you to get to enlarge upon that a bit. How do you think the Washington, was it the Lincoln Washington Battalion by now, wasn't it? How did the soldiers deal with this hand-to-hand fighting? How did these sort of young men you described before from New York, etc., deal with
it? They were no different to any of the others in the International Brigade. They were just as effective and just as they felt the rigors of the campaign perhaps a little bit more. There was no difference in their fighting qualities whatsoever.
And how were the fascists to fight against at this stage?
Oh, well, fascists you could divide into three sections. There were the ricketts, which were the backbone of the fighting in Franco's armies. They were the fascist people. There were the Carlists, the Carlistas. They were the ones who had supported an unsuccessful rebellion against the monarchy some 100 years earlier. But they were fanatical too, the Carlistas and the ricketts. There were the ordinary soldiers who were just drafted into the army and were conscripts and weren't any different. They had no feelings. Sometimes they're certainly when they were declared to us, their sympathies were very plain that they were on our side. At other time, they just obeyed orders and so on. And again, going back to my time on the Northern Front in Vizcaya, I remember in the attack on Victoria one time, it was either my lieutenant or sergeant, I think it was a lieutenant there, a tall, angular, Basque fellow, and we were attacking a sort of smallish hill, just 50 feet high or something. It was surrounded by some earthworks and sandbags and so on. It was a terrible, drizzly sort of day of slightly before Christmas, and we were all wearing ponchos, which were just blankets really with a hole cut through for your head, and that was our chief thing for keeping warm. We were able to use and keep our equipment dry underneath the ponchos. Then just as we were making this attack and we were just subduing this redoubt there, some poor young Spanish fellow, terrified out of his lips. I was a little bit in advance. I don't know whether I was in advance of anyone else, but certainly in a little bit ahead of the lieutenant where I was. And he came out with terror stamped all over his face, young fellow, old face smeared with dirt, and where he'd been lying in the dirt with mud and so on. And he was holding up his hand saying, camaradas, camaradas, no si morto, please don't kill me, you know, camarada. And I was accepting his surrender, and this fellow just before me, this bit tall, angular fellow, said, yes, I think he was a lieutenant, or he said, cabron, cabron, and raised either his rifle or his sidearm to shoot this fellow down. And I said, no, 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 shrieking, you know, I thought it was wrong. He was plainly giving himself up. And although the fighting was going all around you at the same time, this one incident stood out in the, and he says, cabron, cabron. I'm still not quite clear what that means in Spanish. But and then he fired twice, and twice went through my poncho, very close to my body. And I remember the expression of horror and as this young fellow died. You know that this is just an incident of showing how it can generate. And I'm sure he wasn't a dyed in the wool fascist. He wasn't wearing the red beret of the Requetés or the no arrogant bluster from the Requetés and so on. But anyway, back to the where was I before?
Belchite, attack on Belchite.
Pardon?
The attack on Belchite. We
were. Oh yes, in Belchite, and the same sort of thing happened in innumerable cases. I don't mean exactly the same incident, but the cases were, whenever possible, we took prisoners, but the other side wouldn't.
Do you know of that happening? Do you know of that happening? Do you know a personally of a
yes,
case of that
course,
happening?
Oh, yes, of course. We'd lose a position and then regain it afterwards and find many of our comrades mutilated, not necessarily Americans or English or something, but they would be East Europeans and so on. And I found it even more so where we often positions changed hands more frequently in the early days of the war in the Basque country, where you came on and where they'd ripped the girls' blouses off them and then cut off their breasts because they'd found bruise marks under their right shoulder where they'd been using a rifle and things like that. And many of our comrades castrated and hung up on fences, all sorts of terrible things happening. And, of course, the things that I didn't see happen, such as the horror of the bull ring at Badajoz, which I'm only going by experience, but where they herded all the Republicans into the bullring and machine gunned them down, several thousand of them. That is just well authenticated hearsay. And then coming back to Belchite.
What do you remember of Belchite, Bill? What do you remember of it? Can you tell me what you remember?
The
of it?
Fighting there.
Yeah.
Chiefly the fighting with hand grenades, house to house, from one room to another. You'd be firing through doors and sneaking round outside and trying to shoot through the windows. Of course, most of the houses there were stone houses, very strongly fortified, and so on. Eventually, we managed to take. I wasn't one of those who went into the church, but the Dimitrov and the Lincoln captured the church in Belchite, and we'd lost. We did gain Belchite, and it was a very strong point in our favour, because it was a strong point which the fascists had to hold, in which they wanted to mount their impending counterattack. But terrific losses, and as I say, our air forces were, whenever they could be even 1-4, were always vastly superior to the fascist ones. But mostly it was a question of 10-1 or even a greater proportion with the fighters and bombers that the fascists had at their disposal. And, of course, the replacement program, every plane that was lost on the fascist side were replaced with two or three more. Every one that we lost was irreplaceable. After the fall of Belchite, after this very, very strong battle, we went in. We were transferred to rest positions behind the lines, and it was there that I was transferred from the Lincoln Washingtons to the Mackenzie Papineau that had just been formed in Spain. Many Canadians had been agitating for a separate name battalion of their own, that we could call our own, because there were so many Canadians there. There were almost as many Canadians as there were British and Americans, so we felt that we were entitled to have our, which isn't quite right. I didn't care one way or another. To me, as a firm internationalist, it didn't matter whether we were fighting under the name of the Lincoln Battalion or under the name of the Mackenzie Papineau. But for the folks back home, it could create a difference, of course, and the way they collected money for Spain and for the battalion, so that I was transferred to that, and all the new members of the of course, it wasn't a form just of new Canadians that just had arrived. They pulled out many Canadians from the Lincoln, Washington, and to form this, and they also, wherever possible, placed new recruits into the Americans into to make up for the depleted numbers in the Lincoln and try and get as many Canadians. But, of course, along with many of the Canadians they pulled out were many, many Americans, so that although the Mackenzie Papineau was in name Canadian, it was very, very little difference between that and the Lincoln Battalion itself.
Bill, yeah. Bill, what did you do at the rest position, and where was the rest position? Could you tell me?
Oh, yes. Well, the rest positions would be... we would go back perhaps 10 miles behind the lines in an olive grove, and we would we still had ponchos to a great many of us still like the idea of having ponchos instead of a great coat for the cold, but at this time it was midsummer, but even so it was high up in the hills of Aragon, and the cold was intense at night. One small point that transferred with me was a little Jewish fellow. Yes, a small Jewish fellow, again from the Bronx, Leo Mendelowitz. But I found afterwards, long after he'd I'd returned from Spain, that his real name was Leo Gordon. That I think he'd followed his brother to Spain. His brother had died earlier in the war, and he'd come to Spain. He again was a product of City College, New York, and we just didn't like any weird. I suppose we were somewhat. Not the best of soldiers, both Leo and myself and others too, especially the seamen that were in the American battalion and were later in the MacPaps. They were called the seamen section. Of course, they were used to working as merchant seamen, using their own initiative, and when there was any bullshit going around, they just wouldn't adhere to it, and Leo and myself were much the same. I remember when, I think it must have been someone longer than, I said we were 6 days at this time behind the line. Perhaps it was as long as a couple of weeks, I can't remember, but it was glorious sun beating down at there, and for some reason our commander, Bob Thompson, who distinguished himself both before and later on, an American, I think from Chicago, and also we had a political commissar. It just shows how wacky some of the conditions were, that this fellow either came from Chicago, or he either came from Chicago or Cleveland, from a very wealthy family, and but when he embraced communism, he felt you've got to do it wholeheartedly. So this fellow who'd never had any hardship in his life joins the Longshoremen's Union and became an organizer for them and one of the leaders of the Longshoremen. And it's on the tip of my tongue, can't remember him now. Anyway, he was the political commissar. We also had, as our company political commissar, a black leader. He was the brother of Angelo Herndon. People probably, even in the States or Canada, can never remember Angelo Herndon, but he was the one of the militant Negro people at that time who was